Welcome to Elevations, bringing new perspectives to science, technology, education, and the arts. I'm Amy Reynolds. How is technology changing our roles as citizens? Our guest today is Dr. Michael Beam, whose research helps answer this question. Dr. Beam is an assistant professor in the School of Communication Studies at Kent State University. Welcome, Dr. Beam.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
I'm curious, just to start off, how did you get interested in studying media polarization and its effects on people's beliefs?
Well, actually, I first got interested in studying communication technology. When I came to graduate school, I had been working in the information technology field as a system administrator. And when I came to school, my advisor challenged me to say, what about technology, since that's what I wanted to study, is different than what's being done in our field right now. And at that time, about a dozen years ago, the key difference to me seemed to be personalized communication, tailored communication, that these companies like Google and Facebook, they're collecting all this data on us and using that data to give us messages that are effective, that make them money. And that wasn't being studied much in, you know, the mid-2000s. And so I was really interested in studying how do algorithms in technology influence our communication patterns. And it just so happened that I was surrounded by people who were studying political communication and political polarization. So that was the context in which my research sort of set off in a direction in. So there's a large question about, hey, if we're surrounded by information that's being tailored to us, are we able to effectively be citizens and communicate in a public sphere and have all the information we need to make good citizen decisions?
So I know you've done a lot of different studies, and so there's probably not one global takeaway, but if you think about a couple of key takeaways, particular to what you were just talking about with, let's say, maybe social media, what are you finding in the ways people use and engage social media and that impact, if any, on polarization?
There's a notion right now that social media and internet technologies are driving a lot of our polarization. We are seeing the highest levels of polarization in a half century right now. And we've also seen the rise of technology. So there's this correlation between the two. And that's what I've set off on studying. And one of the major takeaways from several of my studies is there's actually not that much evidence to support the notion that when people use technology for news, that those people are more polarized. It turns out that there's a lot of other factors. If you look at deregulation in media, in our country, there's been a rise in partisan broadcast media or cable news. So it's not a single factor and certainly not social media that's something we can pinpoint and say this is what's driving polarization.
How do other forms of communication, whether it's personal, interpersonal, or more traditional, if you think about, like you said, taking the technology piece out of it, what did you find in those spaces?
We did a large data collection during the 2016 election. We collected data right after the nominating conventions, when Clinton and Trump were nominated, right after the three debates concluded, and then right before the election. And we were looking at the changes over time in people's attitudes. And what we found was when people used social media for news, they were actually depolarizing over time. And we were able to show that people who are using social media for news are more likely than those who don't to come across news they disagree with. However, if we look at people's interpersonal networks, we find that when people are talking with people who they agree with, that they're more likely over time to polarize. So it's that interpersonal channel. If we sort and we are hanging out with people we agree with all the time and we're just sort of stuck in this offline echo chamber, that's driving stronger attitudes that sort of favor our own party, but even more so, we're disliking the other party.
Well, and it's interesting because I know that you've also looked at how technology and some of these tools have impacted people's trust in media, or more likely, how likely they are to believe disinformation. Tell me a little bit more about what you've learned in that area.
Yes, we've started a political communication research group here at Kent State that's interdisciplinary between faculty and students. And we've been looking at the role of fact checkers. And what we found is when people get a fact check to some fabricated information, and our recent study is looking in the context of misinformation about vaccines, that most people on the whole, if you get a fact check, you believe it. and you're less likely to share and disseminate this misinformation. However, people who have a high level of predisposition to believe in conspiracies, those people, the fact check doesn't work for them. And interestingly, that measure of being more likely to believe conspiracies in general is not a partisan trait. It's not an extremist trait. It's actually, if you look at it, it's a normal curve across political ideologies and partisan affiliation. So what we're finding is if you are the type of person who's likely to believe in conspiracies, you're more likely then to be the person in the social media context that's resharing that misinformation and causing problems with our information environments. And even the tools we have, like fact checks, are not working for those people. And that's how you get some of the big problems that we've got right now.
So there's been a lot of talk about regulating these companies and about doing something, right, that there's a role for government to play. Given the findings of your research, do you have thoughts about that?
I do. I did a study a few years ago where we looked at the role of the Telecommunications Act of 1996, which was one of the most major pieces of media regulation that's happened in our country in, 50 years. And what we found was after the Telecommunications Act of 1996, people who paid more attention to television news were polarizing at a higher rate over time. That's systematic changes that happened in the wake of that regulation, deregulation is what it really was, helped feed polarization, which is troubling. I just started some work with a group at the University of Amsterdam, and they have an interdisciplinary team that are dealing with personalized communication. And they bring together people from all over the world, but also from many disciplines, from law and policy, as well as computer science and computational methods and communication studies and media studies. And they're tackling the questions you're asking me about. How can we build a sensible regulatory system that promotes healthy citizenship and a healthy public sphere? I think there are changes that companies can make to their algorithms that will improve citizen outcomes. So, for example, a study I did looked at the role of user choice in the customized algorithm on a news platform. I found that if you give users choice, they'll actually usually select news that they disagree with. And because they selected it, they'll attend to it more because they've made that choice. But more and more we see technology companies moving away from that and not allowing users choice and just making decisions based on their past behaviors, not on any sort of agency that they have to make those decisions. So I think there are things that these companies can do to improve the outcomes. The question then becomes, does that become a regulation that forces that company to do it? Does it become... Is this an issue of people who are studying these things needing to work in partnership with these private companies to improve these outcomes? Ultimately, I think we can get to the solution in many different ways. I'm not totally sure that regulation, at least in the United States context, is possible based on our history. In the EU, they have much stricter guidelines toward privacy regulation. And because many of these companies are global companies, that when stricter regulations are put on them in one place, that might then proliferate out to all users across the world. So I don't have an easy answer for that one. I can't say, yes, I think we should regulate these companies, but yes, I think there are changes that these companies can make to improve the health of democracy across the world.
Are there things we can do as citizens to be more aware of how we consume media, how we use new platforms?
Yes. I think the key takeaway from this whole line of work that's happening in political communication is to try to be a mindful citizen and try to have a diverse news diet. Do your best to talk to people you disagree with, even if it's uncomfortable to talk about politics. These things matter to our communities. They matter to our children. And it's hard. It's more convenient to talk to people we agree with and just sort of build up our pre-existing beliefs. And it's easier than ever to go turn on the channel that you agree with. So I think the largest takeaway is people who are diversifying their diets of in terms of diversity of information are going to be the most informed. But I don't think that's new information. I actually don't think that's particularly novel or actionable compared to what it was 20 years ago. I just think we're in a challenging environment and the technology companies we have and the sort of social systems that we live in make it very easy to sort and not do that, not pay attention to the news at all even.
Thank you for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
We've been talking with Dr. Michael Beam, assistant professor in the School of Communication Studies at Kent State University. Elevations is produced by Joe Gunderman, John Nungesser, and Ellie Ellis. I'm your host, Amy Reynolds, Dean of Kent State's College of Communication and Information. Join us every Saturday morning at 7 on 89.7 WKSU.